The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guest on Off the Shelf is Bill Gormley. Bill is the president of the Gormley Group and chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. It's time to really, if you haven't been on the show for a while, to take a look forward or just what's going on, what we can see maybe a little bit this year, or even just talking about some of the current initiatives that we see out there in the marketplace. And I guess the one that's on everybody's mind that we hear almost daily memos coming out on is category management. So I'm just going to open up from, you know, when you hear those terms, two words, category management, from your perspective, what is it? Let's start with there. What do you see?
Well, I think it can mean what you want it to mean. So I think from the standpoint, in regards to your question, I think, you know, in the years past, it was, you know, commodity management. And I think that's evolved into, over the past, within the past 5 or 6 years, strategic sourcing from a government's perspective, and then evolved now into commodity management.
And I'll just say, to your point, like, it used to be the Strategic Sourcing Leadership Council, and they've renamed it to the Category Management Leadership Council, sort of morphing of something that, and really how much has changed, but I'll let you, I'm sorry to interrupt, Bill.
That's good. This is an interactive show here, so we're good.
Okay.
So anyway, I think in regards to category management, I think it's when you, if you can get at the 40,000 foot level, so to speak, Roger, and I'm sure everybody's going to, there's different variations of definition if you want to look for a definition, but I think that at the end of the day, the government's trying to improve its efficiencies. So I think if we could have that sort of an agreement as a baseline definition, efficiencies take on, you know, several areas, particularly when it's within the realm of acquisition and in running of government. So, you know, what we're talking about here in commodity management or commodity in category management is
slipping the tongue there, right, Bill?
Okay, yeah, that's no, right. Yeah, sorry. I'll probably do that 2 or 3 times. But anyway, we're talking about product, services, solutions, and how the government acquires them, how the government consumes them, and in some cases, how the government disposes of them. And that would fall under, you know, category management, the efficiencies of the acquisition side, but also the efficiency and the need of the government identifying its requirements. And as you know, Roger, and I know you've brought it up in quite a few communications and at various presentations yourself through the coalition, that it really boils down to the requirements. And I think commercially, when category management is initiated, that the entity, the originator, you know, has data. So here, the originator, we bring us into the federal space, and the originator is the federal government. And I think the key here is, and this is kind of where we collectively, I think, you know, we get kind of stressed, or we have a strained discussion here. We, meaning the government entity and industry, when we talk about data. And so data is necessary to understand and to measure category management, to make sure it's the outcome is what you've projected. In other words, in some form of an efficiency. And efficiency is not just low bid or pricing. It's time, and it's just the ability to get what the government needs as it needs it and when it needs it, and also how, in some cases, they dispose of it in an efficient manner. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to data, and I think we've seen a lot of indications from GSA, who's sort of been identified as the leader, I think you would think.
Yeah, Rogers, I think it's fair to say.
From OFPP, and to GSA's credit, being a leader for category management and from an acquisition supply side. And with that, you know, there's got to be some clearing of the land, so to speak. So there's going to be some misdirect and so forth, and nothing's going to be, you know, totally smooth coming out of the gate. I think everybody understands that. I think an accelerator here particularly in this administration, in getting category management, you know, further ahead or moving ahead faster, is the government, you know, acknowledging that they need to start using their own data and developing a way to collect its own data. They have various systems now internally. FPDS, as you know, is one system. The government is a system government-wide. So I think the struggle here is, you're asking me the question, but can I ask you a question?
Oh, sure, ask me a question.
Okay. So the coalition, from the members' viewpoint, you know, they're getting, you know, more and more internal questions from the commercial, within the each commercial entity, or why are we doing business with the federal government? And that question is increasing more and more, you know, over the past year because of the cost of doing business. And you and I have both been in government, and that's not a heavy consideration many times when the government puts a requirement out or adds a requirement to a contract that in this case says, you know, we want you to provide us the data that from our orders that we send you under your contract so we can collect it. And I think that's where, I think right now we're in kind of a grit mode of, you know, it's easy to say, well, if you don't like our requirement, if it's too much of a burden on you, then don't bid. And I think that's an unfair statement, particularly I think when the administration overall is really, it made, you know, strides in addressing the small business community and yep, helping absolutely. Out there. So category management, I think, is a, I don't think, category management is the right thing to do. Let's again start with that. It's how you do it and how you implement it.
Right. Well, yeah. And, you know, the issue of data I guess you sort of asked me a question, but you didn't give me a chance to answer. I think it is fair to say that I actually get more questions than I have in the past with regard to what, you know, the federal marketplace and how, you know, what is the business case for actually staying in it or entering it. And I know to the administration's credit, there's a lot of conversation around like reducing barriers and that sort of thing. And it just seems to me the question of data and the management of data is one where there, I think, needs to be more conversation to try to get to a place where it makes sense for everybody. Nobody, and I think this is, you know, there's misconceptions on both sides, but I think it is a fundamental misconception if the view is somehow that industry wants to prevent the government from being able to use data to make good decision making, good data to make decisions. That's not the case at all. It's the way you've sort of described it. It's the implementation. It's a question of where the data comes from and who's bearing that cost versus, and especially frustrating for companies when they say it's their information. They already have it. Now they're asking me and there's Civil False Claims Act potential liability to reporting it. There's concerns about even what it's going to be used for in terms of turning the data back against the company in some manner or some way. So there just needs to be some more conversation around this. And then looking internally to the government as to areas where it's taking action, and DoD is a prime example of that in terms of trying to better manage its data. And I think it's the recent guidance that was issued by AT&L on an acquisition of services. They have a section in there about data collection and management that I think is very interesting and acknowledges that they have the data. And I found that kind of interesting.
Well, yeah, I think that along those lines is that people were like, well, how does the government, you know, it's going to take time for the government to collect its own data, that it's faster for industry to do it. It's, you know, but that in, even what they're asking industry to do and provide back to the government has to have the ability to ingest the data.
Right, right.
Okay. And there's no common platform of data collection template yet. And so there's that wanting to get to that level. And it's the disparity of differences within industry on how data is collected. I don't want to go too much off outside of what we're talking about.
Now, why don't we take a hold that thought? We come back and talk more about data, but we're already up against the first break. My guest today is Bill Gormley. He's a chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and he is also the president of the Gormley Group. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation of category management, and Bill can address his additional data thoughts. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Bill Gormley. He is the president of the Gormley Group and chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Bill, when we took the break, you were had another data thought, I guess, or category management slash data thought, and you know, we had to allow for a commercial break, so give you a chance to come back and address that.
Good, and actually still retain a thought, Roger.
That's so pretty good for an old guy.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So the I think the idea here is that there's a lot of different interpretations of what. When we talked about this earlier, category management, and I think part of this is, and we talk about data collection. So, you know, some parts of industry or many have different sort of definitions of how they, or not definition, how they're organized and collecting the data and not having a common template. And it kind of reminds me, when you say these things, people in general are like, you know, why is this so difficult? Well, years ago, when we implemented the industrial funding fee, people wanted to know how you define the word sale. I mean, everybody,
right?
You
sure.
Know, there
yeah,
was like
I remember
six,
that.
There was about six or seven different ways, at least, of industry how they define sale, and they would ask me, you know, when I was in government, Bill, we need you to define sale, and I'm like, the government is not going to define what a sale is. It makes no sense. You have your standard, whatever that standard is. You report the sale when you consider it a sale. So when we get into data, I think what's happening here is when people are asking for the government's looking to collect data on government purchase or from government purchase orders. You know, some of that data is. The string of elements of data can have different meanings. So you can have 30
days.
You can
go different places in a company,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Many different places.
But even the delivery, shipment, and receipt, this is all different time and different meanings. And, you know, so it's best that, I think an accelerator, I would say, for the government to continue to work towards having a very successful uniform is key. Communications is key. It's a change of culture. Within government to really have a reduction of duplicate contracting. I think OFPP, I think, is hopefully part of category management. I think they were looking, I think Ann Rung had mentioned it at one time, that on GWACs or for other multiple award contracts where they have to do acquisition plans that OFPP has to review, that they would start looking at. Is this really going to be a duplication of effort in government? That is a huge opportunity for instant savings to not let duplication grow.
Right, right. Well, also, you know, speaking of duplication, part of this effort, you know, we know it's been renamed like Category Management Leadership Council. It used to be Strategic Sourcing Leadership Council. And one of the efforts, I guess, to try to reduce duplication and, the old saying, like the government's the biggest buyer, to try to leverage that, or the strategic sourcing vehicles. And, just as a, sidebar on that, where are we on those strategic sourcing vehicles? What have you seen in the market? And, what's it meant for things like the office supply schedule?
Yeah. I want, a lot of people talk about that, but let's talk about the broader question, I think, first, if you don't mind.
Okay, great.
I think
great.
Overall strategic sourcing there's different service areas, different product areas. I think the one that GSA started on years ago was within fleet. You know, they consolidated. They've had a central approach to buying fleet, non-tactical vehicles, to kind of get too technical here on your radio show. But then they took that over to the credit card. So, there's a few people that, they handle the credit card entity contractor-wise. And then there's a small package carrier, the overnight. It's been around for quite a while. There's the city pair, and that's where they do the city contracts. And so city pair contracts with airlines. So those, as an example, are mature programs, okay, and it's a limited market, so to speak. And so when you broaden out to your question now of the more of the commodity side, excuse me, on the like office supplies, there's such a we could all probably have a quick agreement on, you know, there's copy paper, there's pens, there's pencils, there's a stapler, all that. But there's really a lot more to it when you have an office setting, and whether it's personality. I mean, I think people we're not trying to make all federal employees, you know, have the same environment. I mean, there has to be some personal side that it's the, you know, you spend the majority of your time away from your most productive time away from, well, I should say most productive, but during the course of the day away from your family. Yeah. So there's that side of it. And so it can't be, you know, the government's not going to come up with a uniform set of requirements. While they'll try to, there's still going to be, I'll use the word leakage for the lack of a better way of saying it. So I think when you get to the strategic sourcing, if they're too narrow, the government's going to buy outside of it. And so to answer your question, I think there's been a overly managed or a zealous side of not letting prices increase on these BPAs for strategic sourcing because it doesn't look as attractive. But that's the nature of the industry too. You know,
right.
And so there has to be a life of the BPA. It just can't be born and it doesn't change. It has to evolve. And I think that's where, from an industry standpoint, the requirements that were forecasted, estimated requirements, I'd love to be wrong here, but someone hopefully will call in or you'll get an email from this. But I, as far as my understanding is, there has been there hasn't been any BPA under strategic sourcing that's come close to its estimated requirement, which puts the pressure on the company side internally from a business standpoint, saying, hey, you know, where's the sales? That's why we gave them this discount.
Right.
And so
not only that,
you know, GSA doesn't see that.
Right. The investments and, you know, the infrastructure the risk to manage
with it.
To compete for and then manage a BPA.
And so there's this, really, the way these BPAs are structured, the government has no risk. And that's you know, when you commercially, if you're going to go after a good deal, you know, you got to put some skin in the game. And I know you've written about it a lot. You know, the government should just have a guaranteed minimum. I mean, just put something in there to either, and then if the government ends up having to pay the guaranteed minimum, it would be a clear sign to the government now, hey, maybe how we have built this isn't the right. I'm not saying it's wrong how it was built, but it has to be done differently.
Right.
So I think,
well, even, you know, for the office supply OS3 versus the, you know, Schedule 75 sales this past year, you know, the schedule did over $500 million, and I think OS3 was around $100 million, and that's, you know, I think the schedules reflect the market, right? I mean, am I wrong there? Or?
No, I think the key here is, you know, some people would argue, hey, the overall schedule sales are higher because they have a broader array of offerings.
Sure.
Okay, to somewhat be fair here, let's be balanced here. So I think on the BPA side, it has not met the forecast requirements. It's significantly under. So that's part of the deal. So I think, you know, for GSA,
they also close that schedule.
And I think hopefully GSA, the market, you know, we have, I think we talked about it earlier, administration has really put a focus on small businesses and economic contributions or opportunities that GSA regionally provides through its contracts, that GSA would see the value of opening up Schedule 75 again to allow, you know, new offerings to come in, number one. And number two, you know, at some point, the 20-year, kind of have it in front of us right now, but the 20-year contracts are going to run out. And, you know, they have that side.
Well,
how do you get back
No, not just that, Bill, but the other thing that happens is the OS3 IDIQ, which is separate from the schedules, has a 5-year limit on it too.
Okay.
So, it's, you know, so they're going to have to replace that too. So what's easier, to have the schedules already there and compete something off that? I think that might be one of the lessons learned from this, is that, you know, OS2 and OS1 were built off the schedules, and I think there's more flexibility there. Yeah, I think both sides.
Yeah, we haven't gotten into we talked scope here a little bit, but like, you know, the mandatory versus non-mandatory.
Well, funny you should say that, Bill. We're up already on our next break. So when we come back, you brought up
that's
a mandatory break. So when we come back, we can talk a little bit about the the philosophy, results, consequences, both intended and unintended, potentially out of mandatory use type provisions. You know, as I like to say, you know, and I think the one that hopefully I can take credit for it, it's like it appears in the IT world that the Brooks Act is being recreated one memo at a time.
The Brooks Act.
Right. Well, those of us of a certain age and less hair, you know, understand what that was. My guest today is Bill Gormley. He is the president of the Gormley Group and chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Bill Gormley. He is the president of the Gormley Group, chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And Bill, when we took the break, you were about to get into a mandatory discussion about mandatory use provisions type philosophy. And, you know, I guess, you know, what does that mean? And, you know, some just observations about it.
Well, I think mandatory is a hard way of saying you have to do something. But I guess it's clear, right?
Right.
And so, and I think just by nature of people, because, you know, we're talking acquisition here, we're talking buying, for the most part, you know, common goods and services, okay? And in some cases, you know, the credit card comes into play, which in of itself is a commercial practice, right? So I think for the government, you know, needs to, and I think its intentions are for the quantity management to get back to our basis of category management is to prove overall efficiency.
Yep.
So I don't know if overall efficiency fals into mandatory use because there's going to be a lot of variables in what it takes to run the government day in and day out. And I think when there isn't time to utilize an established source of supply, and then it becomes an exemption. And I get a little leery of, and you're the lawyer, so you kind of keep me straight here. It's like, you know, when the government has a mandatory something and the government does not use it, then there's that opportunity for the contractor to come back and sue the government.
Well, it can be. I mean, you're talking about really like a requirements contract where the government promises to buy all its requirements for widget X from the contractor or contractors.
Right.
That's a good question because the issue will be to the extent, you know, they're mandatory. For example, in January we saw the category management policy letter on software licensing, and in there's discussion of establishing sort of mandatory use government-wide licenses for certain products. You know, I think presumably if I'm a government contractor who's going to be awarded one of those, one of the terms I'm going to want in there is that the government promises that all its requirements for this particular functionality that's provided by that software must be met through this vehicle. I mean, that's, you know, that could become an issue, to your point.
So the only reason I'm bringing that up is that then that becomes something else the government has to monitor.
Right.
So that's a risk that the government's taken on. So that's a risk that allows an industry to come back at the government. So I think, you know, if the government, you know, it's kind of the old baseball strategy. What is it? A field of dreams. If you build it, they'll come.
Well,
if you build it, you know, in a way that becomes very attractive and allows for fluid movement of items in and out and on these BPAs, allows for pricing to be fluid as well, and that there's just not a fixed price. I think that becomes more, if you make it more like the commercial sector, that's where you're gonna grow the program, Roger.
Right. Well, along those lines, you know, I think another area that that seems to be interesting with regard to category management is sort of pulling these, you know, to creating like category managers, and they're all over the government, you know, because it is about partly reorganization. So, for example, DOD might be the category manager for transportation, and GSA might be for IT. that's logical for GSA because that's their core mission is procurement on behalf of everybody else. Not to question anything, but in terms of people's capabilities, but you know, how it's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes out.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where it becomes important for the government to have its structure for this formalized. And that's when we would view that as an investment and really.
I think that's partly what they're trying to do with a lot of these memos and things, but
yeah. But it's like, we're going to do this and then we're going to hire somebody. It's kind of like you got to build it and they'll come. I mean, that's kind of where it is. And instead of putting it out there and trying to create the demand for it and through directives or something. And it's just not, I think that's gets back to earlier point, a lot of effort. We have to recognize this, a lot of efforts put into developing these strategic sourcing, programs and within GSA is a lot of resources are used and systems and costs and everything associated with it. Just doesn't evolve out of little effort. So there's a lot put into that, but I think what happens is once it gets implemented, then the usage is not there. Then we can talk about. I think Anne Rung has actually said this at an event over the past year that it's going to take 3 to 5 years to see a value here. And I think in a real value of this category management and again, the improving the efficiencies, I think a way to ensure that objective is the overall objective of improving efficiencies is met is for the government to really begin the process of, we talked just a little bit earlier, is to utilize its own data and then where it's available, maybe just take steps towards more commodity management from a department standpoint or an agency and let them do it. And then cumulatively over time, the 3 to 5 years, have them say, has this worked in your agency, your department? And let's roll it up where we can. And I think that's where GSA becomes a value add there.
Well, perhaps are you saying, there's the Commodity Management Leadership Council. Maybe there needs to be a subcommittee or council focuses on internal management of data?
We do not want to build a bigger government here. I mean,
asking, Bill.
Yeah, I know you are, but I'm just trying to, we got to figure this thing out in an automated way and a results-driven, mechanism. And I think that what we're really be talking about here is what's the best opportunity for this to be successful. And I think the marketplace, the government is running its mission, it has a mission to run. In various missions, and I think here, to maximize the use of GSA's ability to negotiate and to award contracts to meet the government's needs, the customer is going to figure out what's best for them. Now, people are going to say, "Hey, Bill, some people are buying." I think you use the product stapler at $20, or maybe you didn't put the money on the dollar on it. But you're going to have that. You're going to have people with credit cards. That boils down to training and staying on top of it. And I think the more training you can provide the workforce, both from an acquisition, both from a government employee standpoint, and more automated, point and click, if you want to look at it from that perspective, then fine. I mean, that's where GSA Advantage is intended to go, or in more elaborate cases, GSA eBuy. So tools are there.
Or even like the stores for individual.
Yeah, the virtual stores.
Stores for individual. Like
best
Air
kept
Force
secret
Advantage.
In government. Right. That's the agency setting it up. It's like always view GSA as a shopping mall, so to speak. And those virtual stores, it's a great point, Roger. Air Force and VA or just some of them. Have these virtual stores within GSA Advantage, and that's where the
agencies. Can you explain that for listeners what those exactly are?
A virtual store is where an agency has worked an MOU or worked a formal agreement with GSA for GSA to host that agency's BPAs or other types of contracts that agency or department has established as a go-to source for the commodities or services that agency has authorized and negotiated. A lot of them are BPAs off the schedules that are established. So it allows an electronic way the agency or department's employees to go there, and they've trained their employees, they've educated their employees, or that's their responsibility to do that. And those are the ones that are set up for the most part. I know particularly, I think Air Force is the number one user of volume of orders that go through there. And there's, to get back to this, that's an improved efficiency right there, immediate.
Absolutely. Well, and to GSA's credit, I think that's where, I mean, I don't want to, but that's where, you know, oftentimes when you see GSA at its best, it's when it's helping agencies to tailor its solutions to meet that particular agency's cross-cutting needs. And, you know, I think there's a question, at what point does the diminishing returns to the point about one size fits all and strategic sourcing? But time and time again, you see where GSA does a great job supporting, you know, individual agencies' requirements, like through those stores. So, Bill, you know what? We are up on our last break, our mandatory break. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Bill Gormley. He's the president of the Gormley Group and chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And well, it is February. We survived the snowstorm from last week, at least some of us. And so I want to get into a little bit more discussion. February moving forward, what does Bill think we're going to see? You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Bill Gormley. He is the president of the Gormley Group and chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And we've been talking about mostly, I guess, category management and efficiencies and challenges and opportunities across the government. And I think, you know, now this is the last segment. Quickly, Bill, you know, the state of commercial item contracting, where are we on that?
Well, I think overall that the from an industry viewpoint, that the government, unfortunately, continues to load up more administrative costs and differences. You know, as the government says we're doing things like the private sector, we're seeing a reduction of that more so than an increase. So I think we're going to see that. I don't see that changing this year. God knows, I think from an industry standpoint, they would love to see something. I mean, you know, I think we talked about this earlier, you know, OFPP taking a position that contract duplication, there's a way to reduce that. That would be one very, very, positive example of the recognition of its increasing cost to all parties, including government. And you have also with the GSA administrator, you know, Denise Roth has been pretty outspoken about GSA's role, you know, in the business community throughout this country, you know, GSA being an economic catalyst, you know, for within the states and looking at streamlining, Schedule 70 and how long it takes to get an award and then broadening that, hopefully, you know, beyond that one schedule. Granted, it's the largest schedule, but, you know, there's other small businesses that are impacted by the other GSA schedules that they'll use, the experience under Schedule 70 to roll out to the rest of them. I mean, GSA has, combined several schedules into the professional services schedule. So that's pretty much underway now. I mean, when I say fully, nothing's ever fully implemented, but that's pretty much well along its way. And GSA's done a great job there overall. There's a lot of moving parts to bringing all those schedules together. And I'd say for the most part, they've done a great job. There'll be some one-offs, and GSA's done a good job of addressing those. So getting back to commercial item contracting, it would be good just to see the government really, I think it's going to come down a lot of internal training, Roger. I mean, the government has to recognize that the contracting officers, I think there's been, you actually may shut the mic off when I say this, all right?
Okay. Okay. I'm scared.
Hey, GSA, you know, there was discussion for a number of years about the GSA Expo. And does it add value? I actually think they have not had the expo, you know, what, for 3 years now or four, whatever,
four years, like that. Yep.
That you can actually see the erosion in government, significant erosion in government training by the lack of having the expo, because the expo provided thousands of hours of training in a 2 or 3 day period to a lot of government employees who need it, who need the exposure. and who need the opportunity to meet with industry, to see what's coming up, to see what's out there, giving industry the opportunity. I mean, it was a dynamic marketplace that was occurring over a 2 or 3 day period. And the cost of that was borne more by industry than the government. And government had travel and so forth. And, now we're starting to see where the government said, hey, we did kind of go too far when we curtailed all our travel. And because of the unfortunate, event that occurred at GSA, but it was not the expo. So we're talking acquisition here, commercial contracting. You know, I would be, and the industry would be a strong advocate of getting to GSAXO, back up in some form. To provide the necessary training that all things we talked about here.
Sure.
I always love talking to you, Roger, because you're a lawyer, so you try to be very pragmatic here. The FAR, when you think about it, is if you just follow the FAR, it allows for the contracting officer the opportunity to make a decision on their own. And it gives them a lot of latitude to make the right decision for the government and the right decision for that procurement. And I think there's too many things that are put out that are, safety nets, so to speak, or trying to change something that may have gone wrong one time and that it should be addressed. And a lot of this is lack of training and the oversight. We could have another at some point talk about oversight. And the impact of oversight.
Sure.
Being too mm-hmm. much oversight. I mean, it's like no different than family. You start looking over your kids, what they're doing every time. After a while, they're not going to do anything, or they're not going to take a risk. Or risk mean is relative, not that it's a bad thing. And I think there's less risk, or it's viewed as risk now. But I think there's less independent decision making by the contracting officers now as a result of the amount of oversight and the result of lack of training. I think GSA can.
Well,
contribute.
That also I think is reflected in still. The significant challenges in communication mm-hmm. between government and industry. And I think the leadership gets it and they talk about it and they do come out and talk. But at the working level, the sort of openness or even the engagement on individual, transactions with negotiations, I think that's where training, I think, and openness on the part of the government in terms of understanding and listening, I think that's a training piece too. I think that still remains a challenge and requirements, trying to figure out, what we're going to buy and how we're going to buy it. You got to engage the people you're going to buy from because they know more about it than anybody in that dialogue. So,
well, I also think we're talking procurement, but there's program managers that need the training too.
Absolutely.
So absolutely. That aspect for quite a while has been overlooked as far as a need, and that becomes a key element in any procurement. So of when it becomes of significant size. So, those are, I think, commercial item contracting, and I think training's got to be increased, and hopefully GSA will see the light to bringing some sort of event back together, because I think there's no question at this point that the expo did contribute to the acquisition community on those from training standpoint.
Right. Well, here, Bill, the last question is like moving forward. It's February. We have Dan Tangelino used to refer to as a constitutional moment here coming up in November.
There you go.
In one sentence or two, what's the rest of the year look like?
Well, I mean, I think this is political neutral, so I think just the administration is going to change. So that was number one. So that's not a surprise. And a surprise to anybody, they can just like wear it.
Right.
So, but the key here is there will be a tendency that the current administration is no different than any other previous administration. They're going to try and get their agenda done, and they're going to push for it real quick over the next 6 months, 7 months, through the end of their administration. I know that, but that's where we're going to see it. So I think, we're going to have pushes on trying to see a lot of opportunity for the administration is going to view it as a lot of opportunity to get what they want done over the next 6 months. And then we'll be into somewhat of a lull. There are going to be people moving in and out of positions. So from a procurement standpoint, that's why we got the FAR, Roger.
That's right. The FAR always remains
there. Fall back on the FAR, you know. Right. So, and, you know, the first, you know, the budget, you know, I think it says is, you know, was approved in the December. So, yeah, that's off the table. That's good, you know. And I think that takes some of the CR, you know, nervousness out of this, so the agencies at least can plan for the rest of the year in a better way. So I think you'll have some smooth side to that. But I think any big changes, I think you'll probably see with, you know, between now and probably August, and that would be
at the latest, for sure. Right. Well, Bill, thank you.
Is that more than two sentences? I'm sorry.
Yeah, there was quite a few more, but you know, that's okay.
It's a constitutional moment. Right, right. Yeah.
I want to thank my guest today, Bill Gormley. He's the president of the Gormley Group, chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.